The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Kurt Benrud with the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Sci-Fi. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi.
This is John Franz.
And Kim O'Callaghan.
And the story is called After the War by Carl L. Cora. Ship about to explode. Pilot gets flushed. Stripped, sealed, flooded with cryogen. All in no time. Then dreamless sleep. Maybe pilot gets picked up by scoopers roaming the solar system for living debris. Picked up by wrong side? Not so nice. Flushed again. Without hermetic seal or cryogen in your veins. Picked up by right side, cleaned up, and given a new battleship, sent back out. Not so nice either? Too bad. War, not so nice. Scoopers are saying something, but it's hard to hear. I still feel frozen, ears to brain, thawing.
Terran or Martian?
I hear.
Terran or Martian?
Classic technique. Get them to confess while they're still groggy. I grunt noncommittally, then flutter one eye open a crack. Sometimes you can tell the side from the uniforms they wear. But most scoopers got wise and started wearing nondescript clothes. Two people are kneeling over me wearing strange, strange clothes. Like no clothes. Like they've wrapped themselves in cloudy cellophane.
You hear us?
The one on my right says. A woman with dark hair tied back and a tight ponytail. A no-nonsense face with distinct lines, sharp brown eyes. A born scooper. I grunt again.
Are you Terran or Martian?
The other one says. A woman with short crop brown hair. Eyes kinder, asking with concern, are you hurt anywhere, Terran or Martian? Good scooper, bad scooper? If so, they got their lines mixed up. Good scooper shouldn't be asking that. I roll my eyes around, pretending more grogginess than I feel now. Sometimes the ship gives it away. Off-white walls, faint amber glow from the curved ceiling. That doesn't help. Can't hear the hum of an engine. An innovation. But a Terran or Martian one? I don't remember, I say before I can stop myself. They both keep staring down at me. Not what I meant to say. I don't remember is what everyone says. So we were told in training.
Try.
Good scooper says. The resurrection blanket has done its job. The cryogen has broken down in my veins, flooding my system with oxygen, vitamins, minerals. Can I sit up? I say. Bad scooper moves away. I sit up. Small control room. Two tall chairs in front of an array of monitors to my right, a desk running perpendicularly along the wall opposite me, a porthole above the desk with a spacescape beyond. That's odd. Most scoopers know to shield the portholes before resurrecting an unknown agent. To my left, a door to the rest of the ship, and right behind me, I don't actually look, but I know, is another door to a very small chamber. And at the end of that short passageway is a door to painful death.
Where'd you grow up?
Bad scooper says. Her voice is getting edgy. I have to use the bathroom, I say, buying time.
Tell us or go swimming in space?
Good scooper says. Did I get their roles mixed up? Maybe they're both bad scoopers. The feeling in my legs and arms is starting to come back. I'm from New Mexico, I say, wiggling my toes, clenching and unclenching my fists under the thermal blanket, testing my body.
Right.
Bad scooper says. There's a New Mexico on Earth and one on Mars.
Tell us about it.
Good scooper says. It's beautiful, I say. It's home.
Come on.
Good scooper says. Anything in their accents, the way they speak Esperanto? But accents are the same across planets, different everywhere, but different in the same way. Until 20 years ago, you couldn't easily tell a Terran from a Martian. You wouldn't have a reason to, either. But 20 years isn't long enough to develop different languages or dialects. Then I see the giveaway. A glimpse of the dour gray, pockmarked moon outside the port. No way a Martian ship is allowed this close to Earth. Look, I'm Terran, I say, allowing my shoulders to slump. You?
We're like you,
Good Scooper says. Not a smile I like. Not a friendly smile.
What's the code word?
Bad Scooper says. I flex different muscles again throughout my body, trying to get a feel for my state of thaw. Bees, I say, ready to toss my blanket on top of Good Scooper, who is closest to me, then leap off the floor and land on her like two pals having a pillow fight, then try to tie the blanket around her neck and suffocate her. Good Scooper seems to relax. Looks over at Bad Scooper, who nods in agreement.
The war's over,
Good Scooper says.
Mars was completely destroyed. Unlivable. Earth is still livable, but barely. We're rebuilding there.
How long was I out? I say. Because I want to know. And to mask my shock. I feel colder than when my brain was still thawing and my whole body was trembling to shake off the ice in my veins. My home's gone. Ancestral home almost gone. What was the point of all that fighting if it just ended in everything burned to the ground? And what was the point of this screening? If the war is over, shouldn't the killing stop too? Earth is a big planet. If we can't live together, I want to say but keep my mouth shut. Can we live apart for a while? Good Scooper shrugs.
The war ended almost 5 years ago now,
she adds helpfully.
It's taken a bit of time to get back to scooping.
Can I get some clothes? I say. I'm careful what I say. That was part of the training, too. Don't think you've passed the test until you're comfortably seated in the pilot's chair of your own ship. Otherwise, you can still get a one-way ticket into the airlock chamber. Bad Scooper stands and walks across to the desk where there's a folded bedsheet of clear plastic. She brings it back to me, and they watch as I fumble with it. Finally, I wrap it around my torso, like they're wearing it, and it shrinks to fit my body. It's nice and warm. I look at them, and I know something's wrong. They're not buying it.
You're Martian,
Bad Scooper says. Listen, I want to say. I'm human. We're all the same. If you prick me and all that stuff. Let me live, I want to say. I'll be good. A Martian can help rebuild as well as a Terran. But my training is kicked in now, and it keeps my mouth sealed. Once someone decides that they're fine with the air being vacuum-sucked out of your lungs and all of the water in your body boiled to vapor, begging won't save your skin.
Yes?
Good Scooper says. Yes. You're going to wipe out the whole human race, I think. Keep hunting down Martians like we're something different. Keep fighting after the war is done.
Us too,
Good Scooper says, her smile expanding.
Like we said, we're like you.
I process quietly.
Don't worry,
Bad Scooper says.
We could tell almost right away. You get a sense for your own kind. And only a Martian would think to make up a code word for an extinct species. We honor what was lost. Terran minds work differently. Their code words are a new gizmo they've invented, or planets beyond Sol. Always the next thing with them.
Oh, I say.
And the clothes you're wearing, that you struggled to put on, are a Terran invention that never made it to Mars.
I look down at the hazy cellophane clothes. Long live Mars, I say reflexively.
Long live Mars,
they say. What happens now?
We send you to Earth,
Bad Scooper says.
Any job you want, we'll set you up. We have a whole network down there.
If I were Terran?
We would have sent you out the airlock. We need to take back what's ours, but we can't do it until there's more of us on Earth. outnumbering them.
I nod slowly, feeling no relief, but a deep sense of defeat. Then a thought comes into my mind. Any job I want? I say. They nod. Can I be a scooper? Help you screen? Dump out Terrans and Martians to Earth? They look, one to another, then back at me.
Of course,
one of them says.
We have the ships. Most people want to get back to solid ground. But if you're willing to ride the vacuum a little longer, there's lots of bodies to scoop up.
Great, I say. I think I can really help. I don't say. To look at one, you can't tell a Martian from a Terran.
Hello, this is Carrie Lawson reading The Emperor's New Bird by Mary E. Loud. The ruby-throated avian twirled, emerald wings beating in a blur, frothing the air with graceful gusts of wind that swept through the emperor's branches and leaves, delighting his eye petals with the sight of the frenzied dance. A marvel of genetic engineering, the emperor fluted with his reed-like leaves. He clapped one of his broadest leaves on the shoulder of the human bioengineer from Vespertech. I congratulate you. The human, Kida, bowed her head to the emperor and held out an arm, summoning the ruby-throated avian back to her. The chimera of a dozen different subsentient species from as many different star systems landed demurely on Kida's outstretched arm and pecked the human's ear affectionately. Let's see the mechanical one, the emperor declared, fairly blaring the words from his reed stalks. For a floral alien, he sounded an awful lot like a brass instrument. The other scientist, also a human, also from Vespertech, but gone freelance, held up a gleaming silver birdcage. Maradia opened the door, and her robotic creation whizzed out to hover in the air before the emperor. The mechanical bird gleamed with silver and gold plumage, finely crafted metal feathers, every bit as beautiful as the organic bird's red and green. Instead of dancing, though, it opened a long golden beak and whistled, voice trilling and tremulously skipping through a heart-wrenching melody. When the song was over, the little mechanical bird flew back to its cage, and the emperor was speechless. His leaves and flowers quivered as if he would cry. Dewdrops sprinkled the petals of his light-sensing blooms. He had commissioned two of the top scientists to design the perfect companion creature for him, suitable for an emperor, and they had given him two perfect choices. While the emperor deliberated, the ruby-throated avian flittered from Kida's wrist over to the open birdcage held in Maradia's hand. The organic bird landed on the perch beside its mechanical cousin, cozied up to the metal bird, and chirped querulously. The mechanical bird answered, and the two sang to each other, a cryptic, inscrutable, but breathtakingly beautiful conversation. Both, the emperor declared, his frond-like vines vibrating like violins. It is fitting for an emperor to have two companions. He held out a long, grasping vine toward Maradia, and she handed the birdcage to him. The emperor closed the silver cage and held it close to his core, vines and branches wrapping lovingly around it. The two birds, one mechanical and the other genetically engineered, sang to each other. Deep inside the emperor's foliage, like a heart that had fallen in love with itself.
Lies and Lies, written by Mary Ness, read by Warren Keyes. Later, she changes the tale, calling her husband a giant who liked to crunch on human bones. The intruder, a fool, willing to trade a cow for beans. She builds up everything. Their manor becomes a castle. The hill, a cloud. The earthen walls, thick bulwarks of marble and granite. The copper coins, bags of gold. The battered instrument with its broken strings, an enchanted harp that can sing. The beanstalks in their garden reach the sky. She adds in jokes, references to proverbs, nursery rhymes, and other legends. Her hands creep out from their pinched position at her side, gesturing, flaring as she laughs. She does not mention just how heavy the earth had been beneath her shovel. She does not ask herself why she does this, why she has turned her life into a fairy tale of beans and giants, castles and clouds. She knows. She knows that some tales are easier than the truth. Easier than remembering the hard touch of her husband's fists. Easier than remembering the moment when she had realized their small stack of copper coins was gone. Easier than remembering the sound of her lover's neck snapping under her husband's hands.
I'm Joanna LaForgia, and this is Small, Wet, with Angry Bipeds. Review from ratethatplanet.feed.mw. And this was written by Katrina Smith. Galaxy Milky Way. Planet Earth. Purpose, exploration. Rating, 3.5 out of 5 stars. This planet had almost no reviews, so here's the one I wish I'd had before I came for a quick weekend. I had a decent time here, but there are some things you should know. First, the good. I saw hardly any other tourists here, so you'll get a pretty authentic experience. Only one moon, lifeless, but there's plenty of parking. Not a huge fan of the locals, but they do make some good food if you're feeling adventurous. And they speak by vibrating noises and clicks out of their mouth holes, which is weird at first, but easy enough to decipher after an hour or two of practice. Evolution, am I right? There's something wrong with the HVAC. It's either too hot or too cold all the time. Really hard to regulate. I called the closest thing I could find to a repair guy, and he figured out what the problem was, but there's some sort of miscommunication, and someone at the head office insists it's not really broken, so we're stuck with it. If you are here for the polar bears, I'd check in with them now rather than later. Related to the above, something's also wrong with the freezer. It keeps melting ice. Really inconvenient when you want a margarita. And the penguins are having issues mating because of it, too. The night sky is spectacular. You can see the whole galaxy scattered around us from here. From the pink shores of the Garibay Nebula to Zebula 5's dying star. My favorite thing is to head into the deep woods or the desert with a nice blanket and a glass of wine and just drink it all in. Be careful if you happen to light a fire pit, though. Due to the HVAC issue, the trees are dry. Once the forest catches, it'll burn for thousands of miles. There's a mass murder problem. so you might want to avoid public places and any countries the locals feel like targeting, mostly because it's a huge inconvenience to avoid. Their projectile weapons aren't going to do much against our physiology, but it's not like we can avoid the traffic, and it's just an unpleasant thing to be around. Really ruins the landscape. Anyway, it comes and goes, nothing you can do about it. Thankfully, it's kind of like the insect blooms you get on bodies of water in the summer season. It doesn't last long and only surges a few times a decade. Yes, this is the price we pay for the amazing views and access to the native wildlife. The entire planet is basically one big safari park with some genocide mixed in. On the upside, Yosemite has a really cool geyser. Australia has a really cool reef. The coral isn't dealing with the melting ice well, so you should go there ASAP too. The coral bleaches white and gets spiky like the vastest plains of Zebula 3. So maybe if you're a homesick Zebulon, wait a few decades and come back. When the conditions are right, solar winds from the planet's star ionize the atmosphere and make for a really pretty light show. There are tons of mountains to climb, and the sky is a very appealing shade of blue. It occasionally rains for months, but only on one side of the planet at a time, so you can avoid it if you don't feel like getting wet. There's also something really special about seeing water fall from the sky, too, if you're from a star system without a lot of standing water. And snow. Snow is frozen water with a really cool crystalline structure. You can find it on the tops of most of Earth's largest mountains. Just avoid the tons of trash and human waste scattered towards the summit. Do not touch the yellow snow. One thing about this planet. The owner is on some kind of extended sabbatical, or has been for the last few millennia. Nobody is totally sure when they're due back, and frankly, these bipedal half-intelligent humans that were left here to proliferate have already screwed it, so I wouldn't worry too much about anything you damage. But try to treat the place like it's yours, you know? Be kind. Leave the Grand Canyon grand. Keep the fjords fiddly. Try not to start any new world religions, etc. And do what you can to clean up a little bit here and there. I know you're on vacation, but if you want to be able to come back here in the future, you might spend 5 minutes in a little elbow grease, apply some particle physics, fix one or two minor environmental disasters when no one is looking. Think about tomorrow a little bit and recycle. All in all, small, wet, covered in angry bipeds, but nice views. I'll likely visit again, but not anytime soon. Enjoy! At TravelingNublian_586.
Dan Oliver reading Search History for Elspeth Adair, Age 11, by Amy Peakey. What is a sorcerer? Can girls become sorcerers? Why can't girls go to the College of Sorcery? What does the College of Sorcery mean on its FAQ page by Women are biologically unsuited for sorcery due to higher levels of neuroses and anxiety than men? How do I tell if I have a neuroses? Neuroses or neurosis? Is summoning the ghosts of famous people with my Ouija board and asking them for life advice a kind of neurosis? Should I believe a ghost if they told me I should be a sorcerer? Is summoning ghosts a sign of magical talent? Do ghosts lie? Can a Ouija board tell if a summoner is a girl or a boy? Are there any women who have become sorcerers even though they're not supposed to? Why was she called Catherine the Unlikable? What does it mean to be a difficult woman? Was Catherine the Unlikable argumentative and strident? What does never back down mean? If Catherine died in a duel, why isn't she a hero? Tips for summoning Catherine the Unlikable. Her ghost says she was ambushed in a dark alley. Was her killer ever caught? Wiki Grand Sorcerer Chip McWilliams III. Best way to bring someone to justice. Best way to bring a sorcerer to justice. Learning the truth or consequences spell. Grimoire of Veracity Location. Dictionary : Veracity. How can girls check out books from the College of Sorcery? Breaking into a library. Is a book return slot big enough to fit a 90-pound 11-year-old girl? How far is the library from the Grand Sorcerer's campus mansion? Where does Grand Sorcerer Chip McWilliams store his wand when he goes to sleep? How can I use a sorcerer's wand against him? If someone confesses to murder, will they be arrested? Who is in line to become the next Grand Sorcerer? Wiki Arch Sorcerer Belvin Stromboni. YouTube interview, Belvin Stromboni. Dictionary : inclusionary. Google Maps : fastest route, my location, to the College of Sorcery if I leave at midnight.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrood, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.